Rise and shine, St. Louis. It's the Ryan Kelly Morning After with Tim McKernan, Jimmy the Cat Hayes, and Doug Vaughn. It's time to start your day off right. Now, here's Tim, Jim, and Doug, live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios on the all-new 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome into the Ryan Kelly Morning After, broadcasting live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studio on the all-new 590 The Fan. Also 105.7 HD2 FM and InsideSTL.com. I'm still not confident in saying the station we're on because it kind of gets it gets ingrained in your brain when you're at a different station for so long.
Well, we have beautiful mic flags that say 590 The Fan right in your grill.
So correct.
Keep your eye on that, and I think it'll make it easier. Hi, Doug.
Hey.
So yep, I'm Charlie.
I'm struggling with my earpiece.
And we have Jimmy the Cat Hayes. And we have Douglas Elvin Vaughn.
Mm-hmm. Well, hello, fellas.
We have Iggy and the Plowboy.
Well, hello, fellas.
And the Sea Monster.
Ah, hello, fellas.
We have a cast of thousands is what
we
have.
Yeah, there's a lot of people here.
It's great to see Iggy, but, you know, I'm used to seeing Plowsy every day, and I was away a long time. And I walked in, I saw Plowsy's face, and I was like, I missed you.
I think we discussed this off air. In the 3 years we worked together, that was the longest stint we've had apart. And you could really feel it that last couple of days. So I'm glad to see you.
You were pining for me. I was pining for you.
Well, why don't you ring him up? Why don't you call him at some point on your road trip? Just chit chat a little bit. Catch up.
Because absence makes the heart grow fonder. You know that, Doug.
Mm. Yeah. Well, then you didn't miss him too much.
I feel bad, too, because yesterday we're on remote at Ryan Kelly's fabulous headquarters, the Home Loan Expert there in Brentwood. And when you're on remote, it's harder to kind of have the dialogue with the producers. So I feel like Iggy and Plowboy were underrepresented yesterday. So we want to make sure we really get them involved this morning.
I don't feel like you have to do that.
I enjoy it, though. And plus, I don't like talking as much. So if there's five people cutting up the talk time, mm-hmm. it's easier on us.
Right. It's lazy radio.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
I don't enjoy talking much either, fellas.
But you are probably just teeming with red hot takes this morning. That if I had to guess, I think you're going to be the hot take MVP this morning.
Why?
Well, the Cardinals had a game that they let get away late.
Correct.
And
by late, you mean second inning?
And we had a debate where both combatants were stormy and on point.
Yeah, I don't imagine many people watch the Cardinal game.
I was flipping back and forth.
After, the second inning, you still flip back and forth?
No.
That's when it got good.
I think when it got to be, 7-0, I basically... Well, I stopped watching at my house, but then I had to go back to work, and we had it on all the screens. But yeah, about an hour into the Cardinals game, there was no reason to watch, let's be honest.
What about that Falcon game?
Falcon game I was watching as well, because I had fantasy football implications, and somehow the Falcons scored 72 points, and still Julio Jones had one catch, which was very bothersome to me and a lot of fantasy football owners.
Oh, he's got a bad calf, doesn't he?
He does, but still, then don't play. Don't play. Don't be a decoy.
Right.
Seriously.
This isn't about the team. This is about your fantasy.
No, 100%.
Team. Yeah.
100%.
You thought if he's active, you got to play him.
Even wouldn't you, though?
I've done that with Gronkowski. I did that with him last week. He scored 0 points.
I will say, I looked at one point yesterday, and he was targeted, I believe, 7 times. So it wasn't like they weren't trying to get him the ball, but he had one catch.
Mm. I saw the Cardinals had their smallest crowd, and I don't know how long it was. They broke their record of having more than 40,000.
Yeah, it was 200 or something dates in a row.
Kind of surprising here in the heat of the wild card race. I thought.
Well,
night.
I think it's a Monday night. Kids are back in school. And let's be honest, even this rights holder would say there are times, rare times, where they haven't played the most inspired baseball. I think the run of the mill Cardinal fan, not the diehards, maybe haven't latched on the way they normally do.
Well, you had the debate last night. A lot of people stayed home and watched that.
Well, that's true.
That's probably what it was. Cardinals have lost 4 out of 5. And one of those was 11-1, and one was 15-2. And this was really in crunch time.
Both those scores were misleading, though, if you watch the game. A couple 7 or 8 nine different at-bats go a different way. The Cardinals only lose that game by three or four.
Yeah, and if you're, I mean, you yourself, it's a 15-2 score. I mean, that's, you know, out there. But if you look behind the scenes at the run differential, it's very positive for the Cardinals.
Their run differential has taken a major hit here the last week or so.
Now, I did put this together because, and this will come off as total rights holder, but what I've been saying about this team for a long time now is the one defining characteristic of this team is when you think they're headed in this direction, they go in the other. Mm-hmm. That's good and bad. They win four in a row, and then they come home, and then it's terrible. I mean, this is to me, the main consistency with this team.
Right.
And it goes the other way. There were times where I was like, okay, they're exhaling, and this is where it all, you know, comes apart at the seams. And then it didn't happen. An 8-2 loss in San Francisco where they dropped three in a row. That one on September 16, I'm thinking, okay, they exhaled. You know, they fought the good fight, and then they go and they win four in a row. September 8th, a 12-5 loss to Milwaukee. They went on to win two in a row. September 3rd, Cincinnati, 9-1 loss. And they went on to win three.
You brought some notes. You wrote some things down. Because you jotted some things down on some scratch paper.
Because it's occurred to me, watching this team, that just when I think it's over, they win. And just when I think they're going to get hot and go on this run that I admittedly I've been waiting for, and then they lose three or four in a row. Mm-hmm. So I was like, is that true or is that just in my head? So I looked, and yeah, some of the worst losses that I remember, you know, in the recent schedule, where I thought this is where it goes off the tracks. They show up and they put together a three-game winning streak. So I'm just saying, with that in mind, because it looks like, okay, this is it.
Exhaling.
And all of a sudden they win. Is that too rights holder-ish?
I agree with you in theory, but I think nobody really wants to win the National League wild card race. So I think it's hard to say that this Cardinals team, like, oh, they always fight back and get in it. When you look at the American League, you got a team like the Blue Jays that are 16 games over in the first spot. When I look at the National League wild card race, with all due respect, all these teams are above 500. They're not bad teams. They're a little above 500. But I think it's more the fact that the Cardinals are still in it because the Mets continue lose and because the Giants continue to lose. And all three of these teams, especially compared to last season, they're just not at that same type of level where you're winning 90-plus games to get a wild card
spot. The wild card was out there for the taking, and then you look at what these teams, you know, two losses in a row, 4-6 over their last 10. Absolutely no one has seized the opportunity to reach out and take a hold of it. But my point is, based on where they are and who they're competing against and how this wild card chase has gone, if you string together three wins in a row or four here,
that wins it.
You're in a pretty good spot. That's my whole point, actually.
Last year it took the Pirates 99 wins and the Cubs 97 to get the wild card. This year 83 might get you in. 84. The Cardinals are coming in on a wing and a prayer. They are out of gas. And they don't have Carpenter now, and they don't have Diaz. Or last night they didn't have their two best players, not in the lineup. Holiday's still not back. They just don't have their team.
Do you think they lack the stamina?
Well, I don't know that stamina is the right word.
He took a political word.
They just kept kind of
like the way that Trump said stamina last night. So I wanted to kind of interject that.
Well, what happens here, Cap? Because you're exactly right. That's the way this team has played all year. You kind of thought going 5-5 on that last trip, that's good. Because you're going to Colorado. You have to play teams that are contending, so you figure, you know, this is probably a road trip that they're going to lose. They go 5-5.
Except they play better on the road.
But so. Now they're home, and you would expect, okay, if it follows your premise, and you're exactly right, they'll lose a couple. They lose 15-2. Now they're going to come back and win three. But they're at home, which you would expect this 7-game homestand to go 3-4.
Right, but they have put together many winning streaks at home despite the awful home record. And I'm just saying, my point is, you know, when folks say, what do you think of that? I don't know what to make of this. Just when you think they're done, they're not. Just when you think this is the run, it's not. Whatever direction you think they're headed in, they are going to go in the opposite direction. So we'll see if that holds true.
Fairly obvious to say, but the pitching was god-awful. It was just horrendous.
Whoa.
Every pitch Garcia made was, right down the middle of the plate and belt high. And then you're thinking, well, maybe they'll get Waka here. Maybe he'll get going here for the last week. No. You're thinking, well, maybe Weaver, he's got something. No. None of those three pitchers,
you know, in hindsight,
had anything.
I agree. And in hindsight, because, and I give Jaime Garcia a lot of credit. I know he's taken a lot of blowback for sometimes his post-game performances, but he stood there and he answered the question. You could see he was hurting. But in context, what Jaime, he gave up a couple of runs, and then they got him out of there. I thought that was the right decision by Mike Matheny. Very aggressive. He didn't like the look of this thing, didn't want it to get out of hand. You can't know Waka's going to come in and Weaver's going to come in and be worse. And I'm thinking, in context, if you knew, would you have given Jaime the opportunity to come back out there and see if he could straighten it out? And now, well, at sure. the time, I agreed with the decision. But then if you look at how the game went, it went from bad to worse.
Right, yeah. If you knew Waka was going to give up 9 hits and 7 runs and 2 2/3, you'd have kept Garcia out there, of course.
And Waka, you know, people are like, well, we got Waka. And I think Waka's a good pitcher. But let's face it, he had pitched twice in forever. You know, that's not usually how it goes for a pitcher. You have to do some, you know, put in some work to get back to where you need to be. And he hadn't pitched in forever. I'm talking about, yeah, he made a couple of relief appearances before that. He was out for an extended period. That's a hard thing to do.
And that's what's really tough now moving forward for the last 6 games for the Cardinals is you look at some of the potential options, not just for starting, but for guys to come in a relief appearance. And now you certainly have much less confidence in Jaime. You certainly have much less confidence in Waka and Weaver as well. So when you look at options for the next 6 games going to the bullpen, you kind of have to say, well, look what happened the last time we went to those guys.
I thought moving forward when Waka came back and Rosenthal, if you could get one of those guys to be anywhere close to what they were out of the bullpen, that's a huge thing. Waka hasn't been there. I think Rosenthal's been sort of a mixed bag. Maybe he's a guy that can help him. And then you got the start. You got Jaime's start on Saturday, which, you know, unless things continue to go in a bad direction, could be a very important game. And Mike Matheny said after the game they haven't even considered what they're going to do.
What would you do? Because I think that is a really difficult question. Do you give it to Jaime again? Do you give it to Weaver, who also got shelled? There's no good option.
There's no good option.
So either way, Mike Matheny and the Cardinals are going to get criticized. But from that standpoint, what's a good option there for them?
I would probably
just bullpen game.
Go with Jaime again and short leash like it was last night. If someone gave me a better option, I would consider that, but I can't think of any right now.
It could be that the whole season's on the line for that game. It could be a do-or-die, win-or-go-home type of game, and you don't have any clue who your pitcher's going to be.
Well, Doug, how about this? The Tees Farm Captain's Log, 7:45. We have the WWE recap with the one and only Larry Nickel. 8:30, Rick Hummel, the commish, the Hall of Fame Cardinals reporter, joining us, brought to you by Hot Shots. And then how about this?
What?
9 o'clock, guess who we have? Just take a guess. Even though it's written
Billy
on the
Gilman?
Paper right in front
Billy
of you.
Gilman?
Billy Gilman.
No, I didn't look at the paper when
I guessed. I actually I saw you look down at the paper.
I was just looking down at the suspension log, you.
Okay. Either way, Billy Gilman, the country artist known for his single One Voice, which was released when he was 12 years old. He is now a competitor for Adam Levine's team on season 11 of The Voice, airing Mondays and Tuesdays at 7 o'clock Central on NBC. That interview brought to us by DraftKings, the Billy Gilman. You guys, we've been playing this song on the show for a decade, and now he's going to join the show.
I never thought I would have to interview him, but I'm sure it'll be great.
Doug, you're going to handle most of this interview.
No, I thought old a fella is he now?
What are your top 5 questions?
Who's big for you, Gilman?
I think he's about 24-ish?
Is he the guy that sings Mom Doesn't Watch the News Tonight or whatever?
Yes.
Okay. I have no clue how old he is.
That's been a mainstay of this show, though.
How the hell is he on The Voice? Didn't he win an Emmy at one point?
That was my complaint.
He's 28, by the way.
Oh, 28. But still. And it's fine. He has a great voice. But I always thought these shows, like this one, America's Got Talent, American Idol, I thought it was more for the undiscovered talent.
And I said Emmy. I meant Grammy. I'm sorry.
Right, but still, to have people that have won Grammys and have been relatively big stars, I think that's kind of,
I suppose most people wouldn't
against
know.
The spirit of what I thought the show was.
I think most people wouldn't know who Billy Gilman was, though, when he got on the stage.
His name is actually William Wendell Billy Gilman. Of course.
And the show is about entertainment. If you find it entertaining, there are no rules. Whatever most people will watch.
It's like Texas rules, you're
Texas
saying.
Texas rules, you know. That's all it is.
Well, let's be honest. Adam Levine is a good earner, and I've been a fan of his for, long, I think, $35 million last year alone, which my company, Jim Hayes Enterprises, took a sizable portion. But that's the guy that makes the whole show
Why
go.
Would you get a sizable portion of that loot?
He's a member.
And so you get a portion.
We handle some of his finances, meaning we extract some finances.
So anyone who is a member, they send that money through Jim Hayes Enterprises, and you extract a sizable amount of it.
We don't use the term extract when we're dealing with our clients. We like to say we're bringing you under the umbrella of JHE.
Protective umbrella.
Yeah.
Doug, if you were on that show, who would you pick? Who would be your artist you would want to work with?
Blake Shelton, I guess. He seems like a nice guy.
He'd be the least favorite of mine.
What about Why? Miley?
What's wrong with Blake Shelton?
He just looks like a country hick.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
I think with Miley...
He seems like he's a nice guy.
With Miley, you have that X factor, though, that like could take you under her wing and also do like 48 hours of blow and have a party. So I think you kind of have that
factor. Why don't you mention lesbianism? Tim isn't here and you're a lemming, so...
Lesbians are great.
Oh.
Okay.
We got that out of the way.
Hey, Doug.
Yeah.
The text of the day, and you have to remind me to keep going to the text line so I can find some good ones. Four tickets to the Blues versus the Hawks on Saturday, October 8th. Email of the day, four tickets to the Cardinals game on Wednesday. That is courtesy of Sailor Jerry and also Tullamore Dew. And Doug.
Yeah.
Cooking season is here.
This is right when it starts.
Correct.
Right here, the last week of September.
Sure. So get rid of that old stove and wall oven and replace it before the holidays. Great cash rebates and no interest financing are available. And as always, you'll get the lowest price at the Appliance Discounters. That's why Appliance Discounters has the happiest customers and the unhappiest competition. They have six locations. We're talking Baldwin, Webster Groves, St. Chuck, Arnold, on Delore Street in St. Louis, and Fairview Heights, Illinois. You can also check them out online at theappliancediscounters.com. And Doug went there to get a brand new refrigerator.
Oh, yeah.
And you're very happy with that fridge.
Oh, love it. Yep.
All right. So people on the text line are saying they want to hear Doug's piping hot takes on the debate last night. So, Doug, do you want to go there? We have about 25-ish minutes before we're going to have to pivot to wrestling.
I don't have any piping hot takes. I thought it was about what I was expecting, where she would be the more polished debater and come off as more informed, and he would be a bit bombastic, and kind of got that way, especially at the end.
Who do you think won?
He was pretty good in the first 20 minutes and kind of tapered off there at the end. I would think most people would say that she won because she seemed to be more informed on some of the fact, came off that way a little bit. He kind of went off the rails a little bit towards the end of it. I was doing a lot of the who won the debate polls on Twitter. Did you see some of those? A lot of major news organizations came out with a poll, who won, and I thought it would be lopsided for Hillary. And to my surprise, most had Trump actually winning the debate.
I'm not surprised by that because
I saw that.
But if you looked at the
ABC,
if you looked at Republican debates, there were times where Trump had bad performances. And those online polls, they all said he won. There's something I don't know what it is, and I don't know how much stock I put in those. But even during that's why I mentioned it yesterday. Even the Republican debates where he didn't have good performances, these online polls, everyone said by sizable margins he had won. So there's something going on there.
I don't know if that means it's a younger people following him, who are you more likely to use Twitter and vote that way?
Know, but I don't think he is doing particularly well with the younger demographic. They tend to be more Democratic, and the polling I've seen says they're with Hillary.
On the Time magazine poll, which I don't know that Time has a reputation for being far left or far right or anything other than down the middle, they had almost 1.4 million people voted, and 53% had Trump winning. Which is pretty surprising. I suppose the real question is who you're voting for. Because I don't think you could watch that and say, yeah, Trump really won that debate. I don't think a lot of people are saying that.
I think people are just going to those polls and like you said, pressing the button for the person they're going to vote for anyway.
I think that's probably what it is.
I think Hillary won, but I think Trump was good enough where he didn't embarrass himself. There were times I think he was – I didn't watch the whole thing because I'm trying to watch the Cardinal game, but that thing seemed to be over early, so I was watching quite a bit of the debate. And I think if you're a Trump person, there's enough where you're like, he did well. You know, I'm still with him. And if you're a Hillary supporter, you think she won. I think she won. I don't think there was any knockout punch scored or anything like that, but I think she won it. But I think the fact that he didn't come apart at the seams was, in a sense, a victory for him.
Right.
It's the same as all the Republican debates. He says absolutely nothing, even when they ask him, well, how are you going to bring these jobs back to America? You keep talking about losing jobs to Mexico and China. How are you bringing them back? We'll bring him back. My plan is great. We're going to have... And he didn't answer any questions, but it's the same as with the Republican. He never answered any questions, and he didn't last night. But the morons that like him aren't going to come off the Trump bandwagon. Oh, I like what he said. He said nothing.
Well, she speaks in generalities, too.
But at least she has a plan when she brings up things.
We have to tax the rich people and give to the poor people. And she also spoke in generalities.
What does a debt-free college education mean? I heard that during the Democratic debates, too. We need to have a debt-free college. Does that mean free college? Because I thought she even admitted
just
that
another
that
generality out there. Sounds
feasible.
Great. You don't have to pay for college. Okay,
what
great.
What does it mean?
Why don't you go to her website, Doug? She has it all mapped out.
Well, Doug, why don't you go to the website?
I
Doug,
do.
Be with her. Be with her, Doug.
So what is the plan then?
What is debt-free?
What is debt-free?
What does it mean?
If you've been to the website?
Debt-free has a lot to do with student loans that will be not be paid back at a period of time.
Wait,
it will be lower.
You're speaking in general.
There's no taxes on it.
I'm for
there's
that.
It's not free. It has to do with
no
the plan on
it
paying
now.
Back your student
there's
loans.
There's no taxes on it now. You're not paying taxes on your student loan.
No, but you have certain penalties if you don't pay them back at a certain
that's
time.
Not a tax.
Maybe interest rates. I have no idea.
Well, when I meant tax, I meant penalties.
What I don't
and
understand
insured
is
by not paying them back.
It's either free or it's not. You can't say, okay, we're going to give you a loan, and then once you graduate, you don't have to pay it back. Why not just say free college?
If that's the case, I got a couple hundred thousand dollars I'd like back for all the college that I paid.
I have some bullet points here. It looks like to be off her website of what the plan actually is. Every student should have the option to graduate from a public college or university in their state without taking any student debt. So the in-state tuition she wants to be free, which is kind of understandable. All community college will offer free tuition. And then some grants and some budget cuts for minorities, Hispanics, and then also single parents will also get a free college as well. It's not free for everyone. It seems like they want people to stay in state, which is a smart plan.
In state free tuition?
Yeah, that's what
so
it says.
So who's going to pay for it?
And then in state, that's a state issue, not federal. What is the federal government saying what a state has
it's
to
it's wonderful to say everything's free, but at some point someone has to pay teacher salaries. They've got to pay for upkeep. They got to pay for the buildings. It's not everything is not free.
And
it
it's all about
great.
Your income base as well. For families making $85,000 a year or less will be able to go to in-state four-year public college or universities without paying tuition.
Sure.
So it's obviously a break.
80% of the people will go for free?
Oh, yeah. I would imagine
yeah,
so.
Yeah, that'll work.
Like that.
Sure.
I disagree with it. I'm just saying this is on the website.
Entity. So how is the federal government going to pay? Are they going to pay back the states? I mean, there is
no one's going to pay anything.
What if they go the way of Georgia? We had that guest on a couple weeks ago, the college football reporter, where they have the Hope Scholarship, where the funds are drawn from the lottery.
Right. I don't know why the lottery thing didn't work here. I think we ran out of money in Missouri for things like roads and infrastructure, and that a lot of the lottery money that we thought was going to go to education went to other things.
Can we agree that they all lie? It doesn't really matter.
Oh,
they all lie.
Yeah.
I do think when you talk about debt-free college, and I think they should stop throwing out terms like that, but I think sometimes when you're...
It bothers me.
Right. I think sometimes when you're a politician, you shoot for the moon... You're never going to get all that you actually want or put out there. And there's always going to be, if you get anything, a compromise. I could see how in the near future you could have, for example, a two-year college, a community college being something that is almost extended from K through 12, you know what I'm saying, to K through 14. I could see that being a feasible plan for a community college. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but I really don't think, again, if you have public schooling that is funded by taxpayers for K through 12, I don't think it's a crazy thought that could be extended to a two-year college.
A year at junior college right now costs about $3,000 or $4,000.
Depending on if it's private or public, though, too.
Well, that's what Merrimack is.
Okay. What do you think? And I don't know the answer.
That's not an outrageous sum of money,
right? What do you think it actually costs? You know, for each public school student in high school. You know what I'm saying? If you break that down to how much you're paying the teachers and the upkeep of the building, I don't know what the number is, but I bet you it's similar to that. It's probably less.
Taxes would have to go up considerably, yeah, of course, to pay for all that. But I thought we were going to cut taxes.
But going back to what Iggy said, they all lie. So when you don't want to really take a stance and say free college, you say things like debt-free.
Yeah.
So that means you can backtrack and have wiggle room for yourself.
And you can consider my generation the entitlement generation, which I would have to agree most of the people my age are pretty entitled. I don't want free college. I think it should be $5,000 or $6,000 a year. That's pretty feasible for everybody. If you leave college with under $30,000 in debt, which most of that you can pay off while going to school,
right?
That's not. But when you're talking $20,000 or $25,000 a year,
right,
for college, that's when it gets ridiculous. When you're in debt $125,000,
there needs to be cost containment. That's for sure. The price of college is outrageous. It's ridiculous. The price for books, completely outrageous and ridiculous. The University of Missouri should not cost almost $25,000 a year for an in-state student. It shouldn't. But to say it should be free, that just doesn't work. Lord knows I wish it were free. I'm paying for it right now. I wish to hell it was free, but there's no way that it can be free and still function. It doesn't have to be $25,000, I wouldn't think. Every university you go to has got multi-million dollar construction projects going on. No matter how bad the economy is doing anywhere else in the country, it's sure not going bad at college campuses. They're thriving. They're money machines.
There are some smaller private colleges, as I read, that are having trouble. For the most part, you're right. And I think when we've had this discussion politically about the cost of an education,
everybody agrees on this. This is not a partisan debate.
It is too high. And instead of saying, it's always who's going to pay for it, it's got to be, no one says, why is it so? These colleges they're sitting on endowments of billions of dollars,
right,
yet they continue to raise the rates for an education higher than the cost of living is increasing. Mm-hmm. And no one says why.
And because living in a dorm room is similar to living in a hotel room, and they don't do anything as far as upkeep on those, and it goes up every year. It goes from $10,000 a year to $12,000 to $15,000. And they don't do any upkeep whatsoever. They don't put any new washing machines. But there were more phone jacks in my, like, actual cord phone jacks than there were internet jacks in my dorm. I mean, that just shows how outdated everything is, and yet they still raise the prices for no reason.
And I'm asking this question more generally. I'm not shilling for Hillary or anyone that says that when I say this. But don't you think that all politicians, they throw out there their plan of what they want to do? It never gets accomplished, you know what I'm saying, for either side. And even if you want to have some revolutionary plan, all these things have to get passed through legislation, through the House, through the Senate, and you're going to have a lot of opposition on the other side. So you never get what you want. So you're going to get some type of compromise. And if in the end college is cheaper for everybody, or
no,
if
someone
you do
else
have
is
something,
gonna pay, it's not going to be cheaper. It's going to be someone else paying for it because they will never get
okay,
to the reason
still,
why it's overpriced.
I understand that, but I'm saying the goal is to have college be cheaper for everyone.
Well,
so I think that's
do you mean
narrative.
The goal is to have someone else pay for college?
Well, it depends on how you look at it, because, like, do you think that K-12 should not be funded? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I understand that argument if you
I'm
do.
I'm for that. I'm
okay.
for that.
So then again, I'm just saying this more hypothetically.
If you're fine with
K-12 being funded by taxpayer money,
I am.
Is it that crazy to think that couldn't be extended to a community college for your first 2 years?
Well,
you know what I'm saying? Because that's the more likely compromise.
You can go to a community college for next to nothing. I mean, that's not really what they're talking
about. That's not the issue. Junior college is not the issue.
I mean, that's a shell game where you go.
No, Bernie Sanders has been all over that the whole time. I know that he wasn't in the debate last night.
Community college courses cost next to nothing. Okay, and there are so
many. But for some people, that's still a significant amount of money.
There are so many programs where you can go if you don't have enough income to afford it. There are so many programs you can't. That's not really what they're talking about. Pick your college, a 4-year institution.
But they're not, because that would never happen.
That's what they're talking about.
This is politics.
Well, that brings me to another point.
There's always compromise somewhere in the middle.
Is that pandering when you're like, free college? Well, you don't say it because there might be political college. You say debt-free college. Okay. Isn't that pandering if you're saying it can't happen that way? Isn't that pandering?
It probably is.
Isn't that a populist isn't it populist rhetoric?
Yeah, but everybody talking here, there's five of us, and I think we're from different sides of the aisle, we're all realizing that's not going to happen. And in the same way that I think we all realize that most of these things that the candidates say are not really going to happen. They push for something, and if they get elected, maybe they get 50% of what they really wanted at best. And usually nothing happens because there's so much clashing on both sides.
Call it gridlock.
There's so much gridlock, Doug.
Mm-hmm.
Would pandering be, we're going to build a wall and Mexico's going to pay for it?
Yeah, no.
That will never happen?
That's pandering. Well, first of all, they already approved a wall being built. They just never funded it.
Yeah.
I mean, that passed. Building a wall passed.
Mm-hmm.
That's on the books. They just never did it. That was voted into law.
But Mexico paying for it is never going to happen.
No.
So.
Well, unless you don't take him literally, meaning they're going to revamp the trade deals with Mexico that are more favorable for the United States, and in a sense, the money we recoup will pay for it. I'm just playing devil's advocate, but if you're saying build a wall and stop people coming in, that's, yeah, in a sense, that's pandering too.
Oh, I have no issues that's going to happen. He's going to try to make it happen, but the Mexican president, the former president, everybody says, we're not paying for it. Yes, you will. Okay, Trump said we're paying. It's not going to happen. But
well,
Charlie's
like
right.
I still don't believe he's going to win Trump.
No.
So it's a moot point. But
he might though.
If he does revamp the trade, I mean, that's one of his big things. And I'm not saying his plans have been laid out to a point where I can understand them, or even if he has a real plan. But if he does revamp the trade deals with Mexico, I do realize that we are usually on the short end of the stick with these trade deals, and changes it where it's more favorable and funding can be taken out of that. In a sense, they are paying for it. And I'm just playing devil's advocate on that.
I know, but I agree with Charlie. It doesn't matter what they say. It's all lies. And even give Obama credit. I mean, there are some of the things he said, 7.5 years ago in his address, inauguration, and during the process of him becoming president all through the election year, that things he wanted to do, he tried to get done. But you can't do it with the Republican Congress and Republican Senate. It's never going to happen.
Well, he got Obamacare through.
When they used something called reconciliation, which was usually used for budget issues, and then they had to give exemptions to certain states to get their votes.
Yeah. I don't think you can dismiss everything they're saying is you can't get it through, because they do wield quite a bit of power. And with the power of the veto, too, that they can stop a lot of things from going through.
I agree with you. But my overall point is, if you're really pushing for, quote, free college or debt-free college, I think in the end, you're happy if you could get, let's say, community college or make that cheaper, or you could just bring down the costs of four-year school. Do you know what I'm saying? I don't think if you really asked Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders, you know, take them out of the spin zone, they know that's not going to happen. But the overall goal is just to make college cheaper. And I think if you have a compromise somewhere in the middle, I think that is progress.
But that's not what they're talking
about. But these guys,
they're not talking about making it cheaper.
But, Kat,
just hear me out.
No, but these people are career politicians, which they've been ripped for so long. They know that that's not really going
to
happen.
We don't have to argue about this, because I think you'd agree. They're not talking about making college cheaper. They're talking about changing
free is cheaper.
No, cheaper. The cost. I'm talking about the cost of a college education, which we all would agree is out of control.
Yes.
But no one is talking about rectifying that or looking at why college is so expensive. That would be making college cheaper. What they're talking about is making it so the student doesn't have to pay for it. Okay? That makes it more affordable, you know, for the student. But it still has to be paid. The cost of it is not cheaper. Do you see what I'm saying?
I understand
that. We agree with
that. I understand that. But again, and I've said it five times now, my overall point is just what you said. They want to make it cheaper for the student, and I think that is the goal. And like everything in politics, you shoot for the moon, and you meet somewhere in between. If you get it accomplished at all.
It wouldn't take a rocket scientist to slash a lot of college costs. Does a chancellor need to make $1 million a year? I mean, this is not a big business. This is education. Does the president need to make $700,000 or $800,000 a year? What is it about a textbook that would cost $700? Are you kidding me?
That's insane.
I mean, you can go to Barnes and Noble and find a book just as big for about $30. But yet this is $700. How much do the subjects change really every year?
Worse than that, Doug, is that you have a professor who writes a book that no one would ever buy, and then he requires you to buy his book for $90.
And how about it's 90.
And how about the fact that really people don't read hardcover, you know, tangible books as much? Drive around. All the bookstores are closing because everybody's reading things online.
Right.
The Kindles and all that. How much does it cost to just download that book on a Kindle? I have no idea. I've never done that, but it's got to be, I mean, what is that, $1? $5?
Right, that's a huge profit center. And yet no one takes on the establishment of education. Nobody dare do that. Because then the other side will say, what, you don't like education? You want to cut education? Well, no, we want to cut ridiculous. You could go in the bookstore and put everything in there 90% off, and they'd still be making a profit on it.
Okay, I'm going to turn this around, okay, because I want to move off of that, if that's okay. But if you had a choice of voting for Hillary, and I'm not saying Lester Holt was the perfect moderator, but if you had a choice to vote for president, Hillary, Trump, or Lester Holt, I think I would vote Lester Holt.
I think most people would. I think most people would love to have another option than the two that we have.
I'm genuinely curious, and I'm trying not to make this the whole... We all argue with each other. I'm genuinely curious of what Doug thinks about Lester Holt and how he moderated.
I thought he was fine. I was surprised to hear all the criticism he got afterwards. I thought at times he disappeared. You didn't even know he was there. He just let him talk.
And Trump said he was fair. But in the aftermath, the Trump campaign, and I agree with this to a certain extent. From what I watched, he seemed fair. He didn't seem to have a dog in the fight. But they didn't bring up her foundation or Benghazi or some of the things that the Republicans wanted brought up.
Yeah, he still has a couple more debates to do that.
Well, he's not.
I expect that he will.
He's not doing it.
Yeah.
Anderson Cooper's doing the one.
No, I mean, Trump can bring that stuff up.
But also,
Do you think that's
legitimate? I certainly understand that point. But also, Lester Holt, he's a 57-year-old man. He's an African-American. He's a registered Republican, by the way. Since 2003, which Trump didn't know about beforehand.
Said because he was a Democrat.
He kind of pre-complained about the fact that just thinking NBC News was biased, not knowing that Lester Holt is actually, you know, has been a registered Republican for the last 13 years or so. I totally understand that, but I also think he was focusing more on topical issues. And you can bring up Benghazi all you want, and you can bring up emails all you want. I do think both of those topics have been
the foundation
covered and exhausted very much. Doug, I just said that. I'm saying you had an 11-hour testimony a year ago on Benghazi, and the emails have been talked about for the last, two or three years. So I it's easy to go back to that. And Trump, you know, he did once when they were talking about his tax returns.
What about
returns?
The foundation, which constantly has more? That's more in the news. And also the emails, you know, every week they're dumping.
That was brought up.
You know, the fact that the president of the United States, according to the documents dumped by the FBI on a Friday afternoon, used that server under a pseudonym after saying he found out that she had this unsecured. I mean,
things that he emailed too could have been compromised.
When you put national security at risk, it's never going to go away. And overall, I thought Holt was fair, but I think that it's fair to say why wasn't this brought up? I don't think the email thing is like old news. By any stretch.
But again, I think he focused more, and I'm sure there were five more topics he wanted to get to.
Yeah, I'm not
they said him. They said that thing was supposed to run 90 minutes, and you could tell, I think in the first segment, they were probably 15 minutes over already. And he was getting run over, but I think that's going to happen with any moderator, and I think that's fine. Like, I'm looking on Twitter, and people are saying, he has no control. Well, that's fine, because the debate isn't about him. And honestly, I want to see those candidates kind of interrupt and get passionate and have a retort after they disagree with something. So
I agree with that.
So I was fine with that.
But when you're the Secretary of State and things happen under your watch, like Benghazi and the emails, that's not old news. That's very pertinent to this whole thing. We'd really like that to go away, so would you please stop talking about that?
No one's saying that. I think it's fair to say, though, that those topics have been exhausted for not just months, but years. And Again,
but the emails are not going. The emails
have been exhausted for years. It's
what
still,
I'm saying
still
is,
coming out.
Doug, there's been so much coverage of it. Like, what do you think is going to be said that hasn't already been said?
Well, we won't know because she deleted most of them.
But
and
she's been,
five members of her staff have been given immunity by the FBI.
And,
so we won't know a lot that was in there.
He brought that up. You know what I'm saying? Also, for these candidates, they're all smart. They know how to pivot from one issue and to go to their talking points. You know what I'm saying? Like, for example, there is a lot of questioning about cyber hacking and cybersecurity, where Donald Trump started talking about his 10-year-old's computer skills, which I thought was odd. That is a perfect spot to get into the hacking of the emails and focus on the fact that if you're so worried about Hillary's emails, there's a spot where national security data could have been compromised. That's what he should have done. I mean, there's so many opportunities to do things like that. And I understand why people would think that Lester Holt did not ask some of those questions. But also, I think strategically, he needed to be better. And I think he was, for example, like he spun off the tax return. I thought that was a great moment for him. When asked about the tax returns, he basically said, I'll do it if she releases the 33,000 emails. And I thought, as I'm watching there, I go, this could be a really bad moment for Hillary. If he pressed on that, I think he could have scored points.
You know what she did, though? I thought that was a very powerful moment. Let's try to figure out why he wouldn't release his taxes. And she brought up a number of things. And you know what? Mm-hmm. He should. I don't know what's in there, but she brings up a valid point. Why won't he release? If he says, I'm going to do it after the audit, and the government says, you know, you can do it now. The audit doesn't mean he should release his taxes. And that's something he can't get away from, and she would not let him.
Richard Nixon did release his taxes during an audit.
Yeah, and everyone said, no, you can release your taxes during an audit. It doesn't hold water, what he's saying.
Do you guys remember, because I was just more focused on the Republican debates because I just love Trump going after 14 different people. But when Sanders and Clinton had their debates, was there more than one moderator?
Yeah,
I understand when the Republican, because you got 15 people up there, you had four or five different moderators.
I think they had sub-moderators, like they'd bring in someone. The Democratic debates I saw, they would bring in different people to sort of moderate.
They'd have like
segments.
A political pundit. Yeah. They might have somebody from Univision or
Latin
American.
I would do that. I mean, you know, I feel bad for Lester Holt having to do the whole thing when you could have had three or four other people kind of delegating. You get this topic, you get this topic. And I just think it would have been easier than him doing the whole thing by himself for 2 hours.
I thought he did, I agree with you. You want to have a back and forth. You want to give him a little freedom to jump in. And I thought he did a fairly good job of controlling it. I thought he was fair. But on the other hand, with the complaints at certain topics he did not bring up, I think those are legitimate too. It's never going to be a perfect thing where everybody's happy.
And you know what? If Anderson Cooper, he's a smart guy, he should go out there on his show and say, To both parties, Democrats and Republicans, what did you like about that first debate, and what do you think wasn't covered that should be covered in the next debate or the one after that? There are two more.
You know who should
you
host?
Think he should ask the public that? That's
don't
not
you think?
Happen?
Don't you think that's important?
That's
though?
Not going to happen. He's not going to ask the public what he should ask.
I think deep down, these journalists, they do want to be respected. They don't want to look like shills for one side or the other. Unless you're talking about you're working for a network that's obviously, you know, cheerleading for one side.
Like CNN.
We don't have those.
I don't think that Anderson Cooper is this blatantly biased guy. I don't think that Lester Holt is either. And I do think deep down they want to be respected by not just their fellow journalists, but the public, and not come across as heavily on one side.
Yeah, but if you are a card-carrying Democrat, I'm not saying Holt was, but you're going to get criticized unless you go after the Republican. And I think that there is, to me, there's a little concern. You know who they should get to host these things? If they want it to be down the middle and fair and also install the entertainment aspect, Jeffrey Ross would be great.
That would be fun.
Now, Matt Lauer is a member of the Clinton Global Initiative, a member, and he was criticized wildly for dare questioning Hillary, for pressing her on a couple
things.
Yes,
he was.
He was vilified for doing it.
He was eaten by his own.
That's why I like the town halls, because the people ask the questions. Now, granted, they look through them to make sure those are the ones they want to use, but still, it's the voters that are asking the questions.
I don't, if it's transparent, you know, sometimes in the aftermath, and I can't remember, it might have been a Republican, but, you know, Was the daughter of the Nevada, you know, Republican Party or Democrat asking a question that seemed like she was just an innocent little kid and her parents put her up to it. Mm-hmm. You know, like that kind of stuff turns me off.
Yeah. It's probably best if there's a professional up there asking.
What question would you ask Hillary if it was a town hall and you were up there, Doug? What question would you ask Hillary?
Good question.
Why did you delete the emails? What are you trying to hide?
Well, she's answered a thousand times.
And she's yet to answer it.
Well, she won't answer you either, so come
well,
up with
you
something
asked me what the question was. That's what I'd ask.
All right.
If you're just going to say it's okay not to answer it, then what good is a debate at all?
Ask her something she'll answer.
What, you mean you can't ask her a tough question?
But
you
she's
can't
not
ask
gonna,
her the question
she's
that
been asked that
know?
A thousand times.
Okay, and she's yet to answer
well,
it.
Well, she won't answer it with you. Give me something that she will answer
Here's
that you
the
want
question
to know about.
I would ask. It. Here's the question you should ask. Hillary, what's your favorite beer? And she says, Bud Light. It's a light-bodied lager with a fresh, clean, and subtle hop aroma.
Nice.
Delicate malt sweetness and crisp finish for ultimate refreshment. It's brewed using a blend of premium aroma hop varieties, both American-grown and imported, and a combination of barley malts and rice. Its superior drinkability, Doug, and refreshing flavor makes it the world's favorite light beer, the favorite beer of Hillary, Trump, and the moderator, Lester Holt.
Yeah.
From my sources.
I didn't see anybody
sources.
Drinking last night, though.
Trump was drinking a lot of water.
Yeah. Hillary didn't drink any water. That's why she has trouble staying hydrated, apparently.
I thought Trump was doing coke last night. You?
No, that's...
Every
that's,
2 seconds.
That's what Howard Dean tweeted.
That was dumb, by the way.
Howard Dean tweeted that?
Yes.
For him to do that.
Howard Dean, the former head of the DNC, said, yeah. Is he doing coke? What, he had the sniffles. And, you know, for all the attention that Hillary's health got, I heard the sniffles and I thought, you know what? This is fair, but people should start piling on Trump. Oh, what does he have, the sniffles? What, is he sick? I mean... Come on. He had the sniffles. Both these candidates, I don't care who you're for, this is a meat grinder. Can you imagine preparing for the debates? I mean, and I give Hillary a lot of credit on this. She was totally prepared. And aside from the crazy smile, which turned me off a little bit, she looked energetic and full of stamina. She did a good job with
China.
Her, right? She stood up there. She is a tough cookie.
Can I ask you this, though? And I know she had a legitimate incident when she fainted, whatever happened with that car. I totally understand that. I do think there was a lot of health talk before that I don't think is legitimate. But I agree with you. But then I also think back. We have seen Hillary Clinton for a long time. Have you ever seen her in one of these settings, whether it be a debate or a town hall? I mean, she's been on TV for years, all the time campaigning. I feel like I always see her as... I'm not saying she's the healthiest person because she's almost 70 years old, but I've never looked at her for hours of a town hall or a debate, which we've seen that a lot, and she always seems like she's vibrant and has energy.
She has legitimate health things, you know, in her past that people are questioning. I don't think, you know, unless it's over the top. You know, when she was grilled by the Benghazi commission, which I think they did find out some interesting things, but it was too disrespectful. Like, I thought they were totally disrespectful that... I thought that was awful. I don't know if you watch that. But she sat there and she answered the questions, maybe not to everyone's liking. That was a meat grinder. And I thought to myself, that's a tough woman who is up to the challenge. Now, there was, like I said, there were some things that I think got glossed over that were important to me. But is she tough? Is she able to stand? Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I will say that I met her in, God, I don't remember, was it 94 or 98? Library Limited, she just come out with It Takes a Village, and the station knew the people from Library Limited, and they got me one of the passes to go meet her and get a book. And she couldn't have been nicer.
Did she say, hi, Iggy?
She shook hands with everybody in line. They were asking questions, you know, about her husband, and she was very friendly. She wasn't, oh, get me out of her. She was smiling, shaking hands, talking to people, and I guess that's what you got to do when you're selling books. But she was very cordial. I liked her. Now, I'm not saying I'd vote for her, Doug. I'm just saying that she came across as a very nice person.
Yeah.
I still have the book autographed by
Hillary.
You
would hope that a politician would come across...
I'm giving that to you for Christmas.
You would hope that a politician would come across nice at a book signing. You would hope that they could...
You would hope. But
they could muster that.
But there's times that people aren't. They just want to get out of there. Thank you. And shine the book and move. No, she took time with everybody.
As far as both of them... holding up last night, Trump with the sniffles. When you're on live TV like that, and especially a situation like they were in, I'm sure there's a lot of natural adrenaline kicks in, too. You notice a lot of people, when they're on TV, on the radio, we don't have to cough or sneeze or get up and use the restroom. There's a certain adrenaline that kind of takes over. And when you have two 70-year-old people, or close to it, standing there for 95 straight minutes, the adrenaline's got something to do with that.
What do you mean? That's
why they both looked pretty good for, I mean, standing in one place for 95 minutes, that's not an easy thing to
but
do.
Adrenaline usually doesn't last for 90, an adrenaline rush.
I think
rush.
It could in a pressure pack situation them, like that.
If you had any questions about Trump's ability, you know, and stamina to hang in there, you saw it last night. Same thing, fair is fair. Same thing with Hillary.
I totally understand why you say it's a pressure packed situation, because I think so much is on the line. But I like to try to look out for things like that. Like, sometimes you can see in a reporter that his fingers kind of shaking, you know what I'm saying? And we have HD TVs, they have tight shots. You can see that person breathing hard, you know what I'm saying? You can see that their chest is expanding because they're probably feeling that moment. And we have a split screen the whole time last night. I was watching for stuff like that, because you can also tell that as a TV person when other people are having those type of habits. I thought both of them looked incredibly comfortable. And I'm not saying they both did great, but I didn't see either of them where the moment was too big for them. They both looked very composed. They both, you know, didn't run out of breath. Like, at the beginning, when, I don't know if you watched on CNN, I don't know how this was on other broadcasts, but Lester Holt came out and did about a 1 minute just kind of introduction saying, hey, we're here, I'm going to sit down, there's going to be some awkward silence until the debate actually starts. And I could actually hear where he kind of had to catch his breath a little bit. And he even said, you know, if you heard a noise back there, it was probably my knees buckling knowing there's going to be 100 million people watching. I think even for big time TV personalities, they realize, man, this is probably the biggest moment of my career.
Well, they're only human.
Right. But again, watching Trump and Hillary, I mean, they've been talking for like 2 years straight every day on a prompter, off the cuff. They both look to me extremely comfortable.
Maybe that's why, it's because they've both been saying the same things. They're not really nervous about what they're going to say because they both just kick into their routines and they say what they've been saying.
But can you imagine the pressure?
Show we had, by the way, the pregame show we had 40 million viewers
you
yesterday.
Didn't.
Did you?
40, yeah. You didn't.
You had Mozeliak, right?
Yeah.
But can you imagine the pressure? Because I think all of you guys, and you know, you're not afraid of public speaking. You spoke in front of people all the time. It's no big deal. But to know that you are one of two people left to become president of the United States, you have 100 million people watching at home, and if you mess up, there's a chance you just cost yourself the election.
Absolutely.
The pressure has got to be unbelievable.
And the prep. I mean, like I said, I don't know. It doesn't seem like Trump's was as in-depth as Hillary. But, I mean, she was apparently crushing it, you know, like apparently nonstop working with the mock debate setup and everything. The pressure is incredible, and the work you had to put into to get ready for that.
Don't you also think, though, and I know that a lot of these politicians, like Hillary, they've been criticized for being career politicians, but there's also an advantage to that. She's been through many debates over the years, running for president, running for Senate. She was the first lady where she saw it up close with her husband. So you can criticize her for being kind of old school Washington. It's the same old thing. But also, I think over 25, 30 years, you're going to gain a lot of knowledge and you're going to be able to handle that situation better. Where in the same sense that Donald Trump, you know, I'm sure his business acumen, he knows much more about business dealings than Hillary Clinton. But in that setting, Hillary Clinton's background certainly benefited her more than his background. Benefited
that him. Was his first debate, one-on-one debate, I think. But you have to say this, his hair looked fabulous. His hair has never looked better than it did last night.
If we stipulate that all politicians are liars, then I think what we saw last night, we saw a trained liar in Hillary and an amateur liar in Donald Trump.
That's about right.
That's fair. I raise a glass to the latter last that will always support their team. Whether on the field or is wearing the shield from the land that's emerald green. There's so much pride when you support a side that's winning or losing, it's true. And it helps to know that success may flow, Doug, like a glass of what?
Tullamore Dew.
Yeah. The official Irish whiskey of the Ryan Kelly Morning After. We had to push Larry Nickel. We're going to do that interview at 7:45. We'll do it right at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. How do you guys feel about that?
That'd be fine.
You're running point. We don't second guess you, Charlie.
Well, I feel like we're actually having some relatively civil discussion about the debate. Might as well, you know, keep that going until 8 o'clock. And then we'll have some wrestling at 8 o'clock. We also have Paul from the wealthy part of West County wanting to talk about the debate. I guess we'll get to you, Paul, after Larry Nickel, if you want to just you know, hang up and call back. Then we have Rick Hummel at 8:30. We have Billy Gilman at 9 o'clock. A whole lot more to come on the Ryan Kelly Morning After, broadcasting live from the Gateway Buick GMC studio on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2, and InsideSTL.com.